Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Perhaps it is the bane of our shared existence that so many people are so misplaced in their work lives and sometimes can make it miserable for the rest of us. Maybe it's the CEO of your company or your manager. Maybe it's you. But how could that be? Each of you followed the money or the profession or the educational track that others had promised would put you in the driver's seat. Still, you're unhappy, not quite as successful as you expected, perhaps, or rolling in money and still unsatisfied. You are not alone. Coming up later, we'll hear from a Columbus area career counselor who works with mid-career displaced workers. Joining us now is a senior associate dean of the Harvard Business School, and before that, vice chairman of the Goldman Sachs Group, Robert Kaplan. He's also the author of a new book, What You Were Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. He joins us now from New York City. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to put a question out to our listeners before we get started and ask them, have you ever changed your career path from what you thought you were supposed to do to what you were meant to do? And if so, how did you decide to make the change? Give us a call and share that story, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Robert, you wrote that you've seen the disconnect between career and life on a broad scale. It plays out in different kinds of people from different cultures, countries, industries, socioeconomic levels, and so on. In your work studying this, has that surprised you?
Yeah, it has surprised me, although I went through it myself, and I still go through it, and I will probably for the rest of my life. But yeah, it has surprised me in that I realize people are struggling with this when they're 18, when they're 28, when they're 45, and when they're 75. It's a never-ending struggle that goes on your entire life. And I guess I kind of knew that, but I more fully appreciate this is a never-ending struggle, and it changes forms all through your life.
And, you know, back in the day, 40, maybe even 30 or 40 and so on back in time, it was very typical to go into a career and stay in a career. And nowadays, it's not that way at all. It's very different. So in a way, the times have caught up with our nature, perhaps?
They have. But I'll tell you, the other thing that's positive and negative, we've lived through, and most of the people listening to this program have lived through 50 years of economic growth. And when the pie is always growing and opportunity keeps growing, you've got a great opportunity to have mobility. You can make mistakes and correct them. People stayed with one company, but they were able to have enough security there that maybe they were able to make the job into more what they really wanted. Today, with economic growth choppier, people are going to get fired more frequently. There's more disruption to industries. An industry you might have started in and you really loved could change form 5 years later where you think, oh, my Lord, I don't really like this anymore. What happened? It's just a faster-changing world today, and I think it makes all this more challenging.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Robert Kaplan. He teaches at the Harvard Business School. He's also the author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. If you have a question or comment, want to share your own story of change, give us a call, 614-292-8513. What is the tradition? I don't even know if traditional is the right word, but what's the traditional route to a career in this day and age?
I don't know the answer anymore.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It used to be, like you said, you try to get a job, ideally stay with a company, and you formed probably deep relationships with people at your company. Today, I work with MBAs, but I also work with people all through their careers. I think a traditional career today, it's hard to say what it is. It probably means you have to be more nimble. You have to be prepared for change. You have to be more adaptive, because the tasks you love and the job you love may change form, and you probably have to be more in touch today with what you're good at and what you're weak at and what you love, because you're going to be adapting to changes all around you more frequently than, say, my parents had to 40 years ago.
In reading your book, it sounds like you're sort of a counselor. It sounds like you're one of those guys that people send people to talk about. And it may not be anybody you particularly know, and it may not be anybody particularly up high up on the food chain either.
It may be. It's anywhere from the children of parents that I'm friends with, to students, to CEOs of companies, to governors of states, believe it or not. There isn't a person I meet with where ultimately we don't get to the point where, boy, I wonder what I'm going to do next, or I wonder what I ought to be doing, or, gee, I've got a concern about ultimately about their strengths and weaknesses, about my strengths and weaknesses and what I love to do and how it fits with the job. So, I get a great cross range of people. I always did in my career, but I really do now. And what I realize is there's that ultimately I can't predict the future, and I absolutely don't know how to give advice to people on what they should do. So the only thing I do think I know how to do is help people with a process they can go through so they can figure it out. And so I've learned to focus more on the process steps than on the answers, because I don't know the answers.
Some people know as children what they're meant to do, but they are discouraged from it. Either people don't take them seriously. A lot of times it's an artist or a writer. Maybe they're overshooting their socioeconomic norm or undershooting it. I knew someone who wanted to be a waitress. Her parents said they had never had anyone in their family who was a waitress. They wouldn't start. They disowned her because she loved the restaurant business so much. She ended up opening her own restaurant. She's very successful. And luckily, she's been written back into the will. But how often is it that somebody knows deeply what they're meant to do in an intrinsic way, you know? And I don't even know how to describe it. Just they know what they're meant to do, but no one takes them seriously because they're too young.
I think people have a pretty good sense on what tasks they love and what kind of environment that helped them shine, because everyone's had an experience or experiences in their life where they were great. They shine. They love what they were doing. And some of people have just forgotten, stopped thinking about it, or been encouraged or discouraged from encouraged to stop thinking about it. And so everybody has an instinct. The thing that sometimes stops them from following it is conventional wisdom and peer pressure. And I would say conventional wisdom, including views of your parents and peer pressure, is so ever-present and powerful to the point where I don't even think we're fully aware of how heavily it's influencing our decisions. So there's the explicit peer pressure where your parents are saying, don't do that, we'll disown you. But there's the more subtle pressure where, you know, you're reading magazines and newspapers and TV and your friends turn up their nose and you're not even aware of how heavily your thoughts are being influenced. And what I'm trying to get people to do is try to be more aware of peer pressure and conventional wisdom and focus more on that shining, those shining moments in their lives, and get more in touch with those. And then figure out, what does it mean? What to do with that? But you got to do the work. And this is work, by the way. Mm-hmm. This sounds like, oh, gee, that sounds like fun or self-indulgent. Well, no. I think it actually, this is hard work. And it's the same as getting in shape or losing weight. It's just as hard and takes just as much effort, and it's a process, and you got to follow it.
Rhonda in Columbus, you're on the air with Robert Kaplan. Welcome to the show. Hi, Rhonda.
I just wanted to share my story that I spent 30 years in insurance and financial services, and then in my late 40s, I decided I was just getting paid more and more to do less and less of what I really wanted to do, so I went back to school and became a hospice nurse, and I love it. So I changed my life, I guess.
Great story.
What was the process? How did you come to that conclusion, Rhonda?
There was a death in my family, and it just made me realize not only that life is short and you better do what you want to do while you have time, but it reminded me that I'd always wanted to be a nurse. So I quit my job and went back to school and went through an accelerated nursing program, and 3 years later, I became a hospice nurse, and I just absolutely love it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Robert Kaplan, how often is it something like that that triggers a change?
It happens a lot. And listen, it's there inside you. and unfortunately took a death in this case, it sounds like, in the family, to get her to decide to act on it. But she did it in plenty of time, and it took courage to do what she did, by the way, to change jobs. Imagine what people said. You know, I'm changing jobs. I'm going to be a hospice worker. I'm sure she didn't get a lot of positive reinforcement at cocktail parties in town, but she had conviction, and she knew. And I'll tell you, when you see her now, and I'm sure she goes and talks to her friends and talks about how happy she is, they're more likely to be envious of her than wonder why she did what she did, because everybody wants that kind of passion.
I'm going to take Richard right now because he wants to talk about career coaches, and I want to hear what you have to say about that too, Robert. Mm-hmm. Richard from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Ann. Mm-hmm. My background is corporate human resources, and during the last decade got caught up in one of those transitions, left the corporate workforce, and worked with a local career coach named Celia. Mm-hmm. And Celia encouraged me to just start my own business. I met with another career coach and named Nancy. After doing some work with Nancy, she also encouraged me to start my own business. So I am in year 8 now of having an executive coaching business. Something I was always interested in is developing the next generation of leaders, and it's proved very beneficial for me. Related to your caller's or to the person's comment, Nancy asked me a question. I said to her in a coaching session, I don't know whether I want to go back and find a corporate job or if I want to start my own business. If I start my own business, I don't know where my money is going to come from, and I don't know how long it would last. Nancy asked me the perfect coaching question at the time, and that was, are you okay not knowing? And as soon as I said to myself, I can't know the future, I can't predict it, I have a passion for starting this, I cannot know, I had the strength and courage to try it. Within 2 weeks, some of my old contacts called me. I was off and running and have a successful coaching business now.
Congratulations, Richard.
Thank you.
Good luck. Robert Kaplan, how do you define a coach?
Well, what a coach does is help take you through a process of figuring out your strengths and weaknesses and your passions, understanding who you are and your story. They don't answer those questions for you, but they ask the right questions. And you heard this coach got Richard to ask the right questions. And what I think Richard found and many of us find is money is an outcome, and it comes as a result of adding value to others. And most of us like money, and I certainly do, but I really love adding value to others. And I think what a great coach will do, either outside a company or inside a company, will help you figure out your strengths and weaknesses and your passions and what you can do that's distinctive and how it might add value to others. And I think this coach also asked the question, if you're willing to let go of how's it going to turn out and focus instead on what's my conviction about how I can add value, the money will tend to follow often and take care of itself. But a great coach helps you understand yourself and ask you the right questions and helps you follow a bit more of a process.
My guest is Robert Kaplan. He teaches at Harvard Business School. He's also the author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. Coming up, we'll talk more about the process he's been referring to. Take your comments as well. We'd love to hear these stories. They're wonderful. 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Singer-songwriter and former French First Lady Carla Bruni wanted to write a love song to her husband Nicolas Sarkozy, but she had a rhyming problem.
I wasn't going to sing Nicolas, Nicolas, you know, and I tried.
So instead, she calls him Raymond. Carla Bruni's Little French Songs today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Il Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with the 2013 Wellness Series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's Wellness Series are at go.osu.edu/series.
Get 89.7 NPR News anytime, anywhere with the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Go to wosu.org/mobile app and download today.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Robert Kaplan. He teaches at the Harvard Business School. He's written a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. We love to hear your stories about how you might have changed and gone from one thing to another that was more fitting for you. 614-292-8513. Robert Kaplan, many self-help books talk about identifying your strengths, but in your book, you argue that a key part to determining the right path is to focus on your weaknesses. Besides the obvious advantage of learning from your mistakes, what makes failure such an important part of our personal narratives?
Well, I back up the premise of the whole book and everything I teach is reaching your potential is more about asking the right questions mm-hmm. than having all the answers. Are you willing to ask a question? And we heard in your last caller, sometimes just someone asking you the right question and framing an issue can spring a light bulb in your head. The answer is almost secondary to having the right question. On strengths and weaknesses, that's a good example. I actually believe in focusing on both your strengths and your weaknesses, but what I'm suggesting is understand and be aware. And what I'm trying to get at with people is a lot of people think it's not cool to admit you have weaknesses. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a job and I'm a big shot or I want to be a big shot, I'm not going to tell people I'm lousy at something. Or in my case, I'm afraid to speak in front of a big group. I mean, I'll look silly. And so what I'm trying to get people to do is be aware of what you're good at and what you're not as good at. It means you have to get observations from people who watch you every day and have an accurate assessment. It's not necessarily a bad thing to have two or three weaknesses. In fact, all of us do, but it's not a good thing if you're not aware of them or you try to overcome them. So I separate out strengths and weaknesses. First is, are you aware of what they are? Second, then decide on tactics and strategy. Sometimes the right tactics are, don't try to bother with these weaknesses. They're too embedded. You're not going to become quantitative if you're not quantitative. But there are certain weaknesses that you can act on and improve on, and they will help you reach your potential. And step two is to try to figure out which is which. And also, you can surround yourself with people who are good at things you're weak at, and that's fine too. You don't need to be good at everything. And so what I want people to do is be aware and acknowledge their failures or what they're not good at, not because you have to fix them, but because they tell you a lot about maybe how you should spend your time and how you can add value.
Mary in Utica, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi there.
Tell us your story.
Well, my story is I always wanted to be an entertainer and singer as a kid. And I knew that. I knew within, deep within me that was what I loved to do. I would actually walk to the edge of the sidewalk at my grandparents' home and stand in front of the road and sing and dance, hoping to be discovered. But as time went by, of course, my parents were like, that's just crazy. No one makes a living doing that. You've got to do something. So out of pressure, I became a secretary. And it was never anything I really enjoyed that much, but every secretarial job I had gave me insight and knowledge on how to promote myself. I worked in a public relations office. I worked at a local newspaper. And all those things kind of gave me a path to learn things that would help me in my career. So, everything kind of led up, and then I became a stand-up comedian, and I've done that for 30 years. Then I started booking comedy, and now I'm getting back more into music and going to nursing homes and singing and playing and taking humor to folks there, and I'm finding that to be so rewarding.
Mary, tell us your last name.
Miller.
That's what I thought. I knew I recognized your voice. You have a wonderful voice. Yeah, big change. It's interesting what Mary said, Robert Kaplan, about
yep.
how she observed things in her other jobs that she took with her to this.
Yeah, and so Mary did something that I encourage people to do. She had a dream, but she kind of came to the conclusion in assessing her strengths and weaknesses that maybe the dream wasn't so realistic, i.e., given her strengths and weaknesses, maybe she couldn't be the kind of entertainer she dreamed about being. So she bided her time, she kept her eyes open, she kept the dream alive, and it sounds to me like she ultimately found a match, first as a comedian and then as a booker. And it may not be the kind of entertainer she initially dreamed of, but because she stayed with it and kept reassessing and assessing her strengths and weaknesses, she found something that was a fit. And that's the trick, is to keep the dream alive. It may not take the form that you dreamed about, but there may be elements of it that you can find in something that you can do. You might not be a great singer, songwriter, entertainer, but maybe you can be a comedian and a booker, even though you might not have thought of that when you first dreamed the dream.
Yeah, I kind of do all of those, though. I think my biggest obstacle was parental discouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done all this stuff, you know, the comedy and the music professionally at a level I'm really happy with. I really enjoy.
So it sounds like you had the talent. You were just discouraged by
yeah,
by your parents.
I was just told, oh, that's just, you know, I came from a farming background, and it was kind of like, oh, you know, nobody really does that. And I think the biggest element for me and what I try when I work with kids is just the courage to continue to hold on to your dream and to do it, to act upon it, not to be discouraged, and just have that courage within yourself that you can do this.
Well, Mary Miller, thank you for sharing your story with us. Where are you next?
I just finished some a tour of comedy shows, and right now I'm getting some music together for the next step.
Okay. All right. Well, hope to see you soon.
I hope so, too. Thanks,
Anne. Thank you, Mary.
Yep, bye-bye.
And, you know, Mary to me said the magic words that a parent or a teacher can really help people with, which is don't have the courage to believe that don't be afraid to do what you believe. Don't be afraid to dream the dream. Don't be afraid to act on your dreams. And if a parent can do that for a child, or a teacher can help a student with that, that's just a fantastic gift to give someone.
In your 5 suggested rules of the road, you begin with this: believe that justice will prevail. And that sounds sort of karmic in nature.
Well, it's similar to what we're talking about. What I mean by that is you can really do what you want to do, but you've got to believe that the world ideally is a fair place. Because what happens is people have a dream, and they follow the steps in this book, and then they don't get promoted, or they don't get chosen, or they have disappointment and setbacks. And that's when the problems happen, in that everybody's going to have setbacks and disappointments. If you decide as a result of those that the world is not fair, what people tend to do when they decide that, or there isn't justice, you start abandoning actually taking the steps. You know, if I watch what I'm eating for 2 weeks and I don't lose a pound, I say, ah, the heck with this. This dieting is for the birds. And what I'm trying to encourage people to do is start with a mindset that even though justice may not prevail at any point in time, over a period of time, it will. And that's a bit of a leap of faith, but it's that leap that allows you to take all the steps, to work on your skills, to follow your passions, to go through the bad days and months that happen even when you are following your passions. Believe that ultimately justice will prevail, and that's really faith. I think you need some amount of faith to take this journey.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Robert Kaplan, author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. If you want to share your story, have a question or comment for Robert, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You asked the question, why do we fail to understand our strengths and weaknesses? And that's a bit different than admitting them.
Yes, and what I talk about is why do people fail? Why do they fail to reach their potential? And I find you think, oh, they're not smart enough, or you're not charming enough. And what I find instead, isolation and inability or unwillingness to learn. Isolation and unwillingness to learn, which means I don't see myself clearly. We all have blind spots. All of us have blind spots. And so you've got to get some feedback from people that observe you and get an accurate assessment, and you've got to be open to learning and realize that learning goes on the rest of your life. And if you have that attitude, then there's no shame in saying, I'm strong at this, but I'm weak at that. There's no harm in that. And allows you to move forward. It allows you to take the next step. And so I find that amazingly high percentage of the time, if people are aware of their strengths and weaknesses, they are able to move forward and adapt and do things that will allow them to go further. But it starts with being aware, and a lot of people are too isolated or don't want to hear it or feel vulnerable when they think about their weaknesses, and it causes them to get stuck in a rut.
Tony in Columbus, you're on the air with Robert Kaplan. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ann, and thanks, Robert. I really
Thank
am
you.
Enjoying this conversation. So I started my career in banking. I worked in bank card, and I did very well at it. And we were going through a merger, and I had a supervisor that was, you know, kind of helping me find what I was going to do next, even though, you know, I had a very promising career where I was. And we brought in this consultant to talk to the staff about some of their uneasiness and making that transition better. And the consultant sat and asked us some questions, and, you know, we told them what we had been doing and what advice we had given. He got up on stage, told the staff exactly what we told him, and the staff said, oh, he's so great. Oh, that was great. And, you know, I said to myself, I want to be that guy. So lo and behold, you know, as career development would go, they sent me to Toastmasters. I started entering some contests. People said that I was really good. And I realized that I really did want to be that guy, that person that came from the outside, gave them an infusion of joy and some hope, and go back out. So I have transitioned. I am a motivational speaker, a retreat facilitator, and I do leadership development. But that road was you know, kind of interesting because people saw the gift in me before I saw it in myself. Mm. So it was really good to have some support. Of course, my family, and I was at the time married to someone who, you know, just really wasn't with that program. You know, they were like, look, I need you to have an 8-to-5. That's what I signed up for. And I'm like, well, this is a career that, you know, you've got to take on a lot of projects. And I had to, you know, I've worked with a lot of organizations to really have something to talk about from the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely believe that helps find you. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I've been willing to work very hard, and I really have made it so that I don't really worry about where's the next gig coming from and where's the next paycheck. I think more about, you know, what's the best that I can do for this audience and what's the best that I can do for myself in the process. And I think that because of it, I'm a happier person. I've tried to go back into that old, rigid, you know, former career, and it doesn't fit. So I'm a happier person. I may not be wealthy financially, but I'm certainly, you know, I'm a happy person, and that's the best wealth I can have.
Robert Kaplan, wealth gets mixed up in this a lot.
Yes. So I talk to a lot of people, and I say, you know, what is your passion? And they say, well, what a dumb question. Money. I mean, what kind of question are you asking me? Mm-hmm. And I say, here's the problem. Money is not an unreasonable goal for some people. The problem is it tends to be an outcome. Money or financial wealth, if that's really what you want, and I actually think people substitute that for what they really want, but even if you think it's what you want, it comes as a result of performing at a high level and adding value to others for an extended period of time. And the problem is, if you're not, so what I encourage people to do is focus on how are you going to add value to others, your strengths and weaknesses, your passion, what gives you a thrill and is a good fit for your skills on how you can add value to others. And what I found is if people focus on that, money may follow, but even if it doesn't follow, they realize that they're happy because they're adding value to the world, and that's really a thrill. But often money does follow that, and the problem is when people say, I'm going to go for the industry where I'm going to make money, they find they often run out of gas before they don't do it for long enough because they don't love it. They don't do it for long enough in order to actually make money. So instead, I encourage people, focus on how do you add value? What's a good fit for your passions and your skills? Money is an outcome. It is not, you're not going to get it if that's a goal in and of itself. It's an outcome.
Tony, thanks a lot for your call. Robert Kaplan, you talk about a person's life story, his or her narrative. What do you mean by that, and what does it have to do with what you're meant to do? In other words, going backwards and talking about your life story. Now, it did make me think of this question when Mary Miller was telling us. She seemed to be very aware of her past and how that mattered.
Yeah, so I go through all these. There's all these steps you go through. How do I add value? Strengths and weaknesses, passions, so on and so forth. Then I get to a point with I find with people where they say something is holding me back. I'm not sure I understand what it is, but I can't confront people. I don't have the courage to act on these beliefs. Why? And invariably, we are all impacted by our life story. And what I talk about in the book is there's three elements of your story. There's the facts, which you can just write down without the spin, just the fact, where were you born, your parents, where you went to school, events in your life, whether you got fired or not, et cetera. Then there's the success story that we all get used to telling. All of us are very good at it. You know, how you overcame adversity, how you got to where you ultimately are today. And it's usually a story with you as the hero. And we're very good at telling that story in a job interview or on a resume. But then there's the third story, and I think Mary referred to it a little bit, and it's the story of self-doubt, failure, I can't. It's a story of injustice. It may even be a story of traumas in your life. And the reason I'd like people to write that story down is the next question is, how is that affecting your behavior today? It may be your relationship with your parents. It may be a traumatic experience you had growing up. It may be a job you got fired from. And what I find is for those who can't move forward, or maybe they find that they're a prisoner of that self-doubt narrative. And the problem with that narrative is it's in your head, but maybe you can't talk to anybody about it, but it is affecting your behavior. And what I want trying to get people to do is be aware of it and think, is it serving you in reaching your potential, or is it holding you back? And I find for many people, writing that story down and then talking to people they're close to and sharing their stories helps unleash them and make them realize, I'm a prisoner of what my mom thought, of what my dad thought, a setback in my life. And you know what? I don't need to be a prisoner. I don't need to be afraid of that anymore. I don't need to worry about pleasing somebody from 20 years ago. It's time for me to take ownership and move forward. And that's why I like people to focus on their story, particularly the failure narrative.
We're talking with Robert Kaplan. He's author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. Robert will stay with us. And then coming up, joining us, Jim Hatch of Success. It's a program it's a partnership of Jewish Family Services and the Central Ohio Workforce Investment Corporation. And it's a program designed to help dislocated professionals find new jobs and plan for long-term growth. So we'll continue the conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
You look at your cute little dress.
I'm like a size 100 now. Anyway, I paid like $2 for it. I look like a whore locked out of her apartment.
That's a sketch about how girls respond to compliments from other girls from the Comedy Central show Inside Amy Schumer. On the next Fresh Air, we ask Amy Schumer if she's as slutty as her onstage comic persona. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
Your WOSU Public Media member card benefits are now even better with the Member Card Benefit of the Month. Each month, show your member card at selected partners for extra discounts. The benefit of the month for June is the Wexner Center for the Arts. Enjoy two-for-one admission to the galleries all month long. Support 89.7 NPR News at the $85 level and receive the WOSU member card as your gift. Just visit WOSU.org. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Explore how Ford's automobile forever changed the American way of life in American Experience Henry Ford, Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV.
Welcome back. We're talking about finding what you're really meant to do. We're talking with Robert Kaplan. He's a teaches at Harvard Business School. He's also the author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. He's talking to us from New York, and joining us in the studio right now is Jim Hatch. He's a career strategist at Jewish Family Services, where they have the program Success. It's designed to help dislocated professionals find new jobs and plan for long-term growth. Welcome back to the show, Jim Hatch.
Thank you, Ann.
Let's talk about that dislocated professional mid-career upset. You're mostly dealing with people who are very unhappy. They've been taken away from a job that they might have loved, or maybe not. They do a lot of discovery in your program.
Well, after listening to Rob, I think they probably need to think about it even more. I think it is a chance for thoughtful reflection on where they find themselves. I think a lot of people get dislocated, downsized, whatever the case may be, and think they were in their dream jobs. And I think it is a time to think maybe it's not. Maybe there's a chance to explore some things, as some of the callers have already talked about, some wonderful stories we've heard. But that's what we're finding. Mature workers, 45 and older, sometimes 50 and older, who are facing the biggest challenge right now in the economy. And it's a kind of a revolving door. I liked what Rob said about adding value over an extended period of time, but the reality we see is that jobs last 2.3 years, and some of us are living proof of that. Some of our clients have been back in the program 2-3 times in the 6-7 years I've been there. So it's a tough time right now for people.
How does that, Robert Kaplan, play into the whole process when you've been let go? You've been fired, or you've been, and more often these days, laid off?
I mean, it's great what Jim is doing, because it's a horrible experience. And I talked about earlier on, you asked what's your traditional career today and how have things changed? And this economy is really creating challenges for people, in that you can do everything quote unquote right and still feel like you've been treated unfairly or unjustly and wind up out of a job. And so what it does is put a great onus on people, first of all, to be able to talk about it. And the fact that Jim's doing what he's doing, and you've got somebody you can talk to about your strengths and weaknesses and your passions and what happened and the trauma of it, I think helps people move forward. But what people have to do nowadays is be very adaptive. And the issue they're finding is, given their age and their strengths and weaknesses and passion, is there a fit out there in a job that somebody will hire them in where they can add value? And it's really challenging. It really is. And I think just knowing that they're not alone, that they're not the only person going through this is affecting thousands or hundreds of thousands of people all around the country or more, I think that alone makes people feel, okay, maybe it's not me. I'll stop beating myself up. and I'll keep working hard to focus on strengths, weaknesses, passions, and where I can find a fit. But there's no question, the degree of difficulty in this right now is harder than at any time in our lives.
Richard in Columbus, you're on the air with Jim Hatch and Robert Kaplan. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Yes, you got a wonderful program again, Anne, as usual.
Thank you.
And I was sitting here thinking, well, the program is absolutely appropriate for what's going on in our country today and throughout the world, a lot of it. And people have done everything right. They got all the education. They meet all the requirements. Yet these bad things happen, they have little or no control over. But here's the way you got to take this, because I've been through some of this myself. And at first, you're sensitive, highly sensitive, and you take it very personally. It almost crushes you. And then you resort to other things in your life. Religion, that'll help you a lot. It helps me. I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I remember what some of the named people in God's Word, the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and what God put them through almost like basic training in the United States Army to get them ready for the leadership that he had them designed for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Moses. He had problems with trying to communicate with people, in big groups, public speaking. And God said, Moses, you're going to leave my people out of Egypt. And Moses said, oh, Lord, he says, I have trouble speaking. They're not going to follow me. He said, no, Moses, it's you. And Moses went through God's basic training and came out a great leader.
Okay.
And that's the way it works. Sometimes you just don't give up. It's like with the Ohio State University marching band plays, Hang On Snoopy.
Okay.
And that's really it. And when they've played that at those games, that's exactly what comes to my mind.
Okay.
Never give up till the last whistle in the fourth quarter is blowing. You know?
All right, Richard. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good one. Thank
Bye-bye.
You all. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
We have an email from Rachel. She writes, when we're young, the value system through which we filter decisions is still pretty immature, i.e. we don't know ourselves well enough to make intelligent, meaningful life decisions. Also, the financial challenges of starting over when you're middle-aged can be pretty severe. Given that, I have the following questions from the perspective of a parent. One, are we pushing our children too hard too early to make these big life decisions? Or two, should we be pushing them into financially lucrative arenas so that they can better afford to make changes later in life? Robert Kaplan?
Interesting question. My own view and dealing with a lot of young people in the job I do. I've had a lot of young people that were students of mine who went into quote-unquote lucrative areas that weren't quite a fit with their passion or their strengths and weaknesses, but they felt they'd get financial security. And what they usually bounce back to me 3 years later and say, I got to stop doing this job. And I say, why? This is what I thought you wanted. And they say, you know what? What I've learned is, back to we talked later, money is an outcome. I'm going to have to do this job for 10 years at a high level of performance. And what I realized, what is more valuable to me is doing something that fits my skills, that I love, that adds value. And this job isn't it. And so money has a funny impact on people. It causes them to learn a lot about themselves once they get it, and the quest to get it can be very diverting. So my own two cents would be I'd want to teach my kids, and I try to teach my students, understand yourself, your strengths, weaknesses, passions, figure out how you can add value in a sustainable way and perform at a high level for a long time. I don't know whether you're going to make a lot of money doing that. I really don't, and I don't know how much power and prestige you're going to have, but I think if you follow that path, you're going to be satisfied with it. I don't know where it will lead, and I know you're probably going to have to be adaptive and change and change course along the way, but stay on that path, and I think you'll get these other things. But I could see why people say, the heck with that. That's easy for you to say. Let's just go after the money, and then we'll worry about doing what we love.
Jim Hatch, How hard is it for people to let go of the money if they've been making those big incomes? They're laid off, and they think, well, I got to get back into something where I'm making the big bucks again. That's what defines me.
I see that a lot, Ann. I guess the other coaches may too, but I think of it as the culture of expectations. I think people come out from the economy where they've been moving forward, even in a job they may not enjoy or like, but their salaries keep going up and up. And we see a lot of clients who may have high school diplomas or bachelor's degrees, but were with good companies and come out having been at $70,000, $80,000, $90,000. And in this economy, they're in a lot of trouble because either they don't have new education to move forward or current skills to move forward. And the expectation is they're going to end up at the same level of salary. And part of our job sometimes is to say, let's look at other things. Let's keep your cash flow going. Let's look at the street level needs you have. And some of the folks with their success stories were talking maybe in situations where they could go back to school for 3 years. A lot of our clients are single family, head of household or whatever, and don't have that luxury. But they are facing a down. I think there's still high expectations, but more reality is going to be a lower salary coming into a new job.
You know, on that point, I'll just add, and it's easier to give this advice to a 20-year-old than it is to a 40-year-old. But to young kids, I give them the same advice. Listen, I like nice things as much as anybody, but try hard, save your money, and keep money in the bank. Watch the spending. By the time you've got a family and you're in your single head of household, you've got to face. You're in a situation and you've got to deal with reality. But I encourage very young people, start in the habit of saving now. I know it's great to buy things, and the society encourages material consumption, but it tends to restrict you and maybe even imprison you from moving to something that's a better fit for your passions and your skills, and don't create your own trap. But it's easier, again, to give that advice to somebody who's 20 than someone who's 40. It's too late when you're 40.
Kathleen, New York City. Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, my question is for those of us who have a lot of different passions and a lot of ideas. I'm an inventor and an entrepreneur and a lot of things. How do you pick the next sequential step, or how do you decide which things to work on at the same time? I'm not necessarily one person who walks single file down the path of the things that I'm working on. So how do I move forward through that and decide?
Robert?
The short answer is I don't know. And none of us do. I struggle with the exact same thing. So one thing I do suggest, for what it's worth, so there's the passion you can put into your day job, and then there's things you can do in the community or outside work. And I think all of us, even if we have children, have some bandwidth to do something in our community. And I found that's always I always encourage people, do one other thing beyond your day job and your family. Try to pick something in the community that fits your time schedule where you can go out and try another passion and try to make a positive impact on the world and see what – and you'll learn a lot from it, and I think it gives you one other channel or other channels. And listen, if you have more time, you can do a couple of things. But I think you pace it and realize I can't do everything at once. But you try to do things that fit into your day job and do some things also outside work.
Well, I'm one of those folks who's been impacted by some of the recent economic changes. And to those fellow folks who've been affected, the best advice I can say is that sometimes things happen for you, not to you. And the more you can look towards that, the better. But I'm not burdened with a day job right now. So how do I pick the next thing? I'm kind of free. So, I have this great number of passions I want to try out in every avenue in the world. It's really a matter of I have 5 inventions right now and 2 businesses that I'm working on. Well, how do I pick which things to work on first?
And if I could add something.
Jim Hatch.
One of the mentors I've had is James Hillman, and his book, The Soul's Code, he asked a couple of key questions, and maybe Kathleen could take these to heart. One is, how am I useful to others? And another one is, what do people want from me? And Hillman proposes that this may very well reveal what you are here for. So maybe that will help.
Robert Kaplan, that value added?
That's it.
Idea?
Yeah. How do I add value?
Mm-hmm.
And what's distinctive about me? At the end of the day, though, for the caller, she's gonna have to make a choice,
mm-hmm.
and she's gonna have to choose one to focus on. And the only 2 cents I'd give is, it's gonna break your heart not to choose the others, but I think what I'd suggest is pick one or two, and focus on those, and then realize you just can't do everything. And I know that's gonna be painful, but to what Jim said, figure out what's got the greatest potential, how can you add the most value, and give it a try, experience it.
Kathleen, thank you very much for your call as well. Life can be long. Once again, you're not, as long as you don't stick yourself, you're not stuck. Real quick, Robert Kaplan, I wanted to get to something. We're running out of time, but
sure.
In some examples in the book, you write about performance reviews and how they don't always reflect the strengths and weaknesses that we were talking about earlier that matter to somebody and where they want to go. And one guy you wrote about was always getting the raises, and his bosses seemed to love him, but he never got the promotion to leadership. So just the idea that don't get blinded by your performance reviews, that those aren't answering necessarily all the questions you should have.
Yeah, or the way I often put it with people is, define your job broadly. If in the case in the book, this person was a big producer, but never acted like a leader or an owner, but acted like was a big producer, and always his bosses kept reinforcing him. He decided at some point in his life, you know what, I want to take a leadership job at this firm, and his bosses said, no, you're a producer. And he said, no, I'm not, and I've gotten great reviews all these years. And so this person learned that you got to act like an owner first before people are going to give you that job. And so this is where I think you can't – one thing, all these – the threads through all this, you can't do all this by yourself. You need to have relationships. You need to talk about your aspirations and your skills and all these issues we're all talking about on this call with other people who you trust and respect. And I think that's a big help. One of your callers talked about faith in adversity. Jim plays this role for people. I think relationships ultimately make all the difference in the world and help you think these things through and realize your blind spots and when you can get off track.
Robert Kaplan, thanks so much for joining us today. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate it.
Robert Kaplan, he's a professor at Harvard Business School. He's also the author of a new book. It's called What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. And Jim Hatch, a career strategist at Jewish Family Services in the Success Program. Once again, Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you and Rob, Ann.
We will have links to both the book and the Success Program at Jewish Family Services at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thank you very much for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.